You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and since it's Taco Tuesday, you again know what that means. Spencer Schultz is back on the show with us. Spencer, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. It is Taco Tuesday. Got another Ravens win, two in a row in the division after that three-game stretch. Anytime you can have a three-game stretch against divisional opponents and go 2-1, that's going to put you in a good place early in the season especially. So I'm very happy with the way the Ravens played, although the kind of dreadful news that Deshaun Elliott is possibly or probably out for the year with a knee injury kind of flew under the radar until Harbaugh's press conference today. So unfortunate news there. Aside from that, I thought the Ravens played really well. They handled business. They didn't turn the ball over other than Andrew's kind of weird mishap. Thought Lamar played great, and the defense looked a lot better. So defense is trending up at the right time, and they've got a bye week coming up that should help even more after a tough game in Seattle.
And let's get right into that Deshaun Elliott news, because this is a big blow to the Ravens. For multiple reasons, the Ravens already without pretty much at this point most of their secondary. They have a lot of key players still active and still healthy, but with Jimmy Smith, Tavon Young, Tony Jefferson, Iman Marshall, now Deshaun Elliott, all some form of injured, along with Maurice Kennedy, who suffered from a hamstring injury. What was once the strength and the deepest part of this team is now the weakness. Spencer, when you look at the free agents out there, Harbaugh said that he was going to look to the outside maybe to find someone to come in and provide some veteran stability. Who do you see as a viable replacement for not only Deshaun Elliott, but for everybody else who's been injured?
Yeah, it's very unfortunate, as you said, because when I'm looking at the defensive snap totals, the four defenders who didn't come off the field were all DBs. Chuck Clark, Marlon Humphrey, Earl Thomas, and Brandon Carr played 62 of 62 snaps. That's not good. I mean, two of those guys are on the back nine kind of. Thomas is around 30 and Carr's past 30. Then with Kennedy going down, he played 37 snaps. And it's really unfortunate for Deshaun Elliott. My heart goes out to him because he's been waiting for an opportunity. He had a really frustrating injury last year, a fracture in his forearm, which has to be obnoxious because it's not something you have to rehab that hard. You can still run and keep in shape kind of. And, you know, you just wish it could have healed a little more. And I thought he's played outstanding in limited action. He ended up seeing 27 snaps before he went out with injury. So that was unfortunate news. The silver lining is that there's quite a bit of decent options out there in free agency. I'm not going to examine trades because I don't know what DaCosta is thinking with trades at this point of depth and stuff like that. But on the free agent market, there is DJ Swearinger, who is my number one option. They call him Two Spoon Swagoo for whatever reason. But Two Spoons had an awesome year in 2018. He played well in 2017 on the Redskins. He got into a verbal altercation with the Redskins coaching staff, and they ended up cutting him, which was surprising. Allegedly, the incident was due to Swearinger being unhappy with the intensity of practice, wanting it to be more aggressive and more intense. And that's the kind of guy you like to have in Baltimore. I think he fits the Ravens' traditional kind of mold and caliber. He actually tweeted following Tony Jefferson's injury that he grew up watching Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, and that he's always admired the Ravens defensively, have an outstanding attention to detail, basically saying, you know, bring me in. If I'm Eric DaCosta personally, I would have him at the castle already. If I'm general manager, DJ Swearinger is in the castle by 3 p.m. today and getting up to speed. I'm getting him fitted for his pad so he can get out on the field and practice with the fellas. The second option I would say is TJ McDonald, who is, he's never played quite as effectively as Swearinger. Swearinger was PFF's top 10. I believe he was number 9 safety in 2018. He had 8 interceptions over his last 2 years in Washington. Then McDonald is interesting because he ran a 4.34 at the combine. He does have range and speed. He's just not very adept in coverage. He's more of a strong safety, a true strong safety that has really good speed. He's had multiple 100-tackle seasons, and he actually netted a 3-interception year on the Dolphins last year. The Dolphins opted to go in the direction of Rashad Jones and Minkah Fitzpatrick at safety as they're going through a rebuild, and they ended up letting McDonald go, I believe, right before the season started. He has not been picked up yet, but he's certainly an NFL-caliber defensive back that deserves to be on a field. He's played decently throughout his career. The other options are that the Ravens brought in A.J. Howard, who is a 23-year-old former Appalachian State player. He is currently on the practice squad that kind of went under the radar. He played for the Patriots throughout the summer and was supposed to make the team, and people were kind of surprised when he got cut. Then the final one that I could see the Ravens bringing in would be Bennett Jackson, who was with the team throughout training camp. They ended up letting him go as the Jets claimed him, and now he has been on the Jets practice squad. The Ravens do play the Jets later in the year, so could never hurt to have a little taste of what the enemy is doing, as I'm sure Bennett Jackson would end up giving them insight into what the Ravens like to do and kind of what some of their little keen details are. But there's four options right there. They're decent. A lot of people want to clamor for Eric Berry. Dude's played three games in the last 3 years. He went through a very tough medical condition that was well documented, which is leukemia. That's not easy. That's not easy on the body. That's not going to allow you to recover as fast from a serious injury like a torn Achilles. He has a deformity in his heel, which is essentially a very uncomfortable bone spur. He's over 30 years old and just not durable. I don't see him as a viable option, so I'm kind of nipping that one in the bud. But basically, I would really like for Swearinger to join the Ravens. I think that he would complement Earl Thomas fantastically. He's pretty similar to Tony Jefferson, honestly. Has a ton of experience. He's played in a ton of games. He was a high draft pick. He, I believe, was an All-American at USC, South Carolina. I think he would fit really well into the culture, and give him a bye week and then a tough game against the Patriots to kind of test his mettle. And I think he could play really well and honestly maybe end up being an upgrade from what the Ravens have had at safety. That also allows Chuck Clark to play in the box and Anthony Levine to keep playing dimebacker. The Ravens have to make a move of some sort. You can't go into NFL Sunday with three safeties. God forbid something happens to Earl Thomas, Chuck Clark, or Levine. You're dead. You're dead in the water. You're going to have a cornerback playing emergency safety, kind of. And then I'm not trying to have that be the situation for the Ravens as they're about to play Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, and Deshaun Watson in three of the next four games. So they need to make moves and make moves fast.
And now with it being six games into the season going on to week seven, people probably know who gets the playing time on the Ravens now. There will probably be a few players who might get a few more snaps here and there, but the snap counts are pretty much set for the most part. Are there any players that you would expected to get more playing time going into the season who haven't really seen the field that much?
Honestly, the first one that comes to mind for me is Tyus Bowser. I don't believe he's seen more than 25 defensive snaps. He's a good weak side outside linebacker. He's not quite big or stout enough to hold the edge on the strong side, but I think he's very disciplined on the weak side. I love his pass rushing technique. He gives a clean move, a definitive move, a rip, a hand swipe, and a push and pull, something of the sort in passing downs. I like what he does. I would like to see more of him. Anthony Levine, honestly, to this point, he played 26 snaps as Jefferson went down and then Elliott. I would think that he would be, you know, up a little bit higher. He has a lot of skill as a dimebacker. He has good understanding. He's a really good cover linebacker, basically, as a dimebacker. Cyrus Jones, I'm a little bit surprised, hasn't ended up seeing the field, but I believe him or Justin Bethel will, as Kennedy now has a hamstring injury, and the Seahawks like to use some three-receiver sets. Seahawks had Will Disley, their tight end, who's been emerging as one of the better tight ends in football, go down for the year, so they also traded Nick Vanette, who was their second-string tight end, to the Steelers, so all of a sudden, they're going to be trying to use a little bit more 11 personnel, I believe, and some more receiver and two running back sets, possibly. So it should be interesting to see there, and it's just scary how thin the secondary is all of a sudden. Hopefully Jimmy Smith is able to come back and kind of even things out a little bit. But at this point, it's Tavon Young, Kennedy possibly being out, Jimmy Smith being out, Tony Jefferson being out, and Deshaun Elliott being out. So imagine if the Ravens didn't sign an Earl Thomas or let go of Jimmy Smith, even though he's been injured or something of the sort, didn't, you know, extend Tavon something, didn't bring Brandon Carr back. They're still scary thin, which is crazy considering the depth that they had. And how it's become a weakness is quite unfortunate, but the bye week should hopefully help to solidify things.
And we're going to get into the full game breakdown, Spencer, after the break. But first, I want to ask you about the special teams unit in this game against the Bengals. Of course, the big play they gave up was that opening kickoff return for a touchdown. But then things kind of settled down a bit. There was a low snap on a punt. But what did you see out of the special teams unit?
So it was interesting, and it seems like whenever the Ravens get kind of confident about some certain tactic that they're using, such as hurdling, or as doing those sky kicks that hang the kickoffs for Justin Tucker around the 5 to the 3 yard line, and then the coverage goes down and tries to pin the other team well beyond the 25. When you publicize something like that and it kind of resonates throughout the media, obviously the Bengals ended up seeing that the Ravens' outside guys were kind of over-pursuing, being aggressive to try and get down and pin the other team back. And they double-teamed one of the quote-unquote wedge busters, the inside kick cover guys, and created a huge seam and ended up having a 92-yard kick return. The ball didn't go as deep as you want. And, I mean, I appreciate what the Ravens were trying to do there, but I would prefer to send the opening kickoff out of the end zone, as you've kind of been tooting your own horn about that. It's kind of just funny that the Bengals saw that and were able to take advantage of it, and it was this here-we-go-again feeling with the Bengals, even though they're out all these different players and whatnot. The Ravens ended up handling them, as we'll get to. But other than that, from the special teams, it was solid. There was a low snap. Tucker luckily was able to carom one off the upright, and it bent back in. I was sitting in my seat in the stadium and was not quite sure if the ball went through or not, but he ended up getting another little angel's kiss, and the ball fell on the right side of the crossbar. So the special teams let up a return. I think that was a little bit of a slap in the face to them and a shock to wake them up and maybe stop being a little bit too cute. Overall, the special teams has been outstanding and typically is, which is good, seeing a transition from Jerry Rosberg into a new special teams coordinator. So overall, it was all right, but that opening kickoff really put a damper on the energy and the momentum that the Ravens wanted to get started in the game. They chose to defer and then let up an opening kickoff touchdown, which is just bad form all around. So other than that, they were okay, but show some things you need to improve on. That's basically the only reason that the box score looks the way that it does. The defense stifled the Bengals for most of the game, as we'll get to. But interesting little tactic out of the special teams and what the Bengals were able to see and do.
Offense will be the topic next, so be sure to stay tuned.
But the folks at Roman, a men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes. The secret to lasting longer, get $10 off your first order of Swipes and free 2-day shipping at GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL.
Welcome back to Locked On Ravens. Spencer Schultz still hanging with us here for our second segment on the offense. And Spencer, I want to start off with Lamar Jackson. Lamar's been the topic of conversation all season and looked much improved against Cincinnati, to the tune of 21 completions out of 33 attempts, 236 yards passing, no touchdowns, no interceptions. But his rushing stats were out of this world, 19 for 152 and one touchdown. Pundits who only look at the box score will see 19 carries and think, oh my God, here we go again. He's regressing to last season. But that's not the story, as all Ravens fans know. So, Spencer, what did you see out of Lamar Jackson on Sunday?
I saw that he was a lot more decisive than he was in Pittsburgh. There were 5 sacks in Pittsburgh. I think we touched on those, where a few of them Jackson kind of saw a ghost and scrambled into a sack instead of just stepping up and through the pocket. Countless times, there's a 3rd and 14 where he just stepped right on up, took off, gave one of the coldest hesitation shutter steps I've ever seen in my life to just freeze a linebacker for a split second so that he could split 2 defenders for a first down. I am of the camp that, and it's funny because Tony Dungy said on Sunday Night Football that he's worried about Jackson. He's on pace for 180 carries, whatever. 3 of those were kneel downs, which needs to stop counting. In baseball, if a batter takes a walk, it doesn't count to their plate appearances. So I think that kneel down should not affect it. But if you're able to look past that and understand that those were part of it, Jackson plays his game. The defense isn't getting Jackson to play their game when he's a ball carrier. He is the one who is choosing to initiate contact, to run out of bounds, to go down, or to do more. And I don't see contact that he's unaware of, that is kind of surprising to him, or anything that he can't handle. Of course, people want to say and think that you're more likely to get injured by running, but most injuries occur in the pocket. I actually read a research study on that, and it was basically found that a quarterback is likely to be injured by running the ball 1 out of every 236 carries, as opposed to 1 out of every 272 dropbacks. So injuries in the pocket are pretty much the same likelihood. Running the ball is slightly higher, not by much at all. And I was happy with the way that he was able to decide mid-air, trucked a safety down by the goal line and then ended up getting tackled. But there's been no big blows that make you go, protect, like, what are you doing there? And a lot of fans just have this really hesitant and resistance to him running the ball. But that's like telling Michael Jordan not to shoot a fadeaway. That's his best part of his game. Why would you not utilize that? And they negate the amount of times where he just skates out of bounds after getting 8, 10, 15 yards, 3 yards, whatever. So he might have run the ball a good bit to this point in the season through six games, but he's not getting hit. I'm not worried about it. The worry is that, you know, when you looked at RG3's rookie year, and that's a quarterback a lot of people compare him to, obviously Robert Griffin's on the sideline with him, and RG3 was upright, getting blown by defenders, getting, you know, blown through, and he was playing their game. Defenders were able to come strike him. Either Jackson is initiating the contact or he's getting out of bounds or falling down. So I'm happy with how Lamar is as a runner. I think he's really smart as a runner, and that's been kind of one of the best overall things since he's been drafted to see is his awareness of how to get down, get out of bounds, and not take too many unnecessary hits for me, as opposed to, you know, what the expectation was with him coming out of Louisville. On the passing side, I thought he was more decisive. He was more confident. His mechanics looked good, and he hit open receivers. He had a good awareness of where guys were and was hitting guys in rhythm a little bit better. We haven't seen many of those crazy throws, but I thought Jackson played an outstanding game. I know PFF felt the same way, and he's actually their eighth-rated passer right now, and that's just in the passing category. So he's been doing quite well, and I'm really happy to see it from a 22-year-old. How much he's progressed is crazy.
And let's talk about the receiving threats that he has, specifically a few, because Marquise Brown did not play. So guys like Seth Roberts and Miles Boykin had to step up, and I believe they did, as well as the tight ends, who also had to step up. Mark Andrews is, of course, one of his favorite targets, but Nick Boyle, both in the passing and the blocking game, and Hayden Hurst. So let's get into all those guys. Spencer, what did you see out of the Ravens receiving corps?
I really liked what I saw, and against the Bengals, knowing this is a game that the Ravens, you know, if the Ravens lost this game, it wouldn't have been because they didn't have Hollywood Brown. That's not an excuse that you can make. The Ravens are still outmatching the Bengals, outcoaching the Bengals, and the Bengals are struggling. The Ravens are in first in the division. So I thought that there was a clear silver lining and upside that it forced Jackson to target Boykin and Roberts and Chris Moore and those guys. And I thought that they played outstanding. I thought Chris Moore looked really good over the middle. Boykin was blocking his tail off. He had a couple nice catches. The slant that he caught, the amount of separation and the footwork, the technique he used to set the defender up with one quick jab step outside, got the William Jackson to turn his hips towards the sideline and then crossing his back because he was turned around and getting wide open on a slant and running for 18 yards. It was awesome to see. I think that Seth Roberts was a very undervalued signing and is someone that needs to be utilized a little bit more in this offense. He's gritty. He's shown great hands. He is a great route runner. He runs really good in-breaking routes. And I would like to see him get an opportunity to go up and grab a couple balls. He is 6'2". He can jump. He does have hands. He is a veteran. So I liked what I saw from those guys. Again, Chris Moore is really fun to see used in those orbit motions where he's coming in motion and kind of toying with the defense as a bell and whistle look. We saw that on a fake orbit bubble screen that ended up being a screen to Mark Ingram with Yonda, Skura, and Bozeman in front of him. Yonda actually laid someone out on that screen, defender trailing Mark Ingram. So I like that I saw a screen as well, since the Ravens apparently are not fond of those, regardless of who the quarterback is. And it was exciting to see those guys get some action. I think that they've been kind of clamoring for it and, you know, foaming at the mouth to get on the field and make some catches. We saw Chris Moore get 37 snaps, 46% of the total offense. Willie Snead was in there for 54 snaps, 67%. Miles Boykin for 45, which is 56%. And it was fun. I mean, looking at the personnel they used from tight ends and receivers, no skill player played over 67% of the snaps. So Boyle led the way with 54 all the way down to Justice Hill getting 17 snaps. We saw Hayden Hurst get a good bit. Pat Ricard was back on the offensive side of the ball, which is a welcome sight. The Ravens seemed to fare a little better with Ricard in the game. He took 30 snaps. Gus Edwards actually outsnapped Mark Ingram by a few snaps, which is pretty interesting to see, even though I love Gus Edwards, and he had an awesome run in this game. So I was really happy with the offense. The one Mark Andrews fumble was just something I've never seen before. It looked like, you know, a baseball team practicing infield flies. The ball was 20, 30 feet up in the air like a punt almost, hit off of his own knee. So that was kind of goofy, and it was not anything that the defense was able to do to the Ravens or any mistakes that the offense made, although Bradley Bozeman was penalized four times. But the offense was efficient, well-run, able to convert when they needed to, and really took the wind out of the Bengals' sails in the fourth quarter. They had a 15-play, 98-yard, 8-minute drive that was capped off by a field goal and basically put the game on ice. So it was awesome to watch this offense operate. Of course, the Bengals have a terrible defense, and they were missing a few key starters, but The Ravens will take it. They are not the ones that make the schedule. You play who's on your schedule, as John Harbaugh said, and it's good. It's a good building block as this team is trying to establish chemistry and figure out their real identity and get some things together, and it's a very positive thing to see.
And finally, let's get into the play calling of the offense. I know, Spencer, last week you were not very happy about it. Did it improve this week?
Absolutely. They were playing to Lamar Jackson's strength, and that is running options, running play action, and allowing Jackson to read one key defender, whether it's on a play action where he's watching a safety and seeing which route concept they bite on, or if it's a read option where he's reading the defensive end. It simplifies the game for Jackson, who's young and still developing. And I saw a little bit less empty than last week, although the one sack the Bengals had, the Ravens yet again went out into empty. The Bengals brought six. The Ravens only had five to block. Lamar couldn't make a DB miss. And I don't get the empty stuff. I would like to see that kind of eliminated, unless it's 2 minute and you are trying to take the lead, or before halftime. You kind of know that the defense is playing conservatively, but I hate when the Ravens go empty, really. But other than that, there was options, there was some RPO, there were slants, there were screens, all of the things that the offense has been missing, these little key elements that just help a passing game get into rhythm. They were using crossers, a little bit of rub routes, and some more modern nuanced things that help a young quarterback and generate easy yards, easy first downs. The Bengals' game plan was to try to force the Ravens to work outside the pocket and outside the hashes and outside, not letting them run up the gut as much. So they did exactly that, and that is why I call Greg Roman's offense flubber, especially the run game. It can be whatever it needs to be. Whatever the defense wants to take away, the run game has more than enough pages of plays to adapt and attack outside, or play power football, or play inside zone, or run jet sweeps and things of that sort, even though we haven't seen a ton of those. And I think that seeing some screens and some slants and the Ravens using the cushion that Bengals defensive backs were giving was magnifique, absolutely amazing. Taking what they're giving you. If they're giving you a slant, just take the low-hanging fruit. Do the easiest thing possible sometimes. And that helps you get in a rhythm and have successful drives, as the Ravens had quite a few scoring drives on the day, including the opening drive for the offense, which tied the game at 7-7, and they responded immediately when, you know, spirits could have been down following that big kick return, and then all of a sudden the offense doesn't feel in rhythm, and the Bengals are up 7-0 with the ball again. So the Ravens kind of neutralized that, made it 0-0 again, and I was impressed with the offense for sure, and using concepts that allow Lamar Jackson to succeed.
The defense was also impressive, and we're going to be getting into that, so be sure to stay tuned. Welcome back to Locked On Ravens. Spencer Schultz still hanging with us here, and we're going to get right into the defense, and this actually works out great because, Spencer, we have a bit of breaking news. You talked about the Ravens finding that next safety, and they appear to have found it. Jeff Zrubik is reporting just a few minutes ago that the Ravens are working towards signing Bennett Jackson off of the Jets practice squad, a guy that you mentioned. Spencer, I don't know if you had heard this news already, but what's your immediate reaction?
I'm a little disappointed, to be honest. I had mentioned him. I was in the process of working up an article. It makes sense because he knows the system, and I guess they think highly of him. I did want to see DJ Swearinger come in, but I guess the Ravens think that there won't be much of a drop-off from Bennett Jackson, as he knows the system. He's been with the Ravens on and off for the last 2 years, so he's going to be more of a depth guy, and it seems like they're really going to try and rely on Chuck Clark and Anthony Levine. I wouldn't hate to see the Ravens bring another player in, but Jackson's someone who knows the special teams. That's an underrated aspect of losing to Sean Elliott, who is basically a 100% special teams coverer. He is always covering. So he'll be able to come in and get on kickoff and all those good things, and probably won't see a ton of snaps, but he has been lauded by Thomas and Eric Weddle and Jefferson over the years, and seems like the players really like him, and he's liked in the locker room and is a guy that can come in and give you, you know, 10, 15 snaps if you need. But I would still like to see the Ravens bring DJ Swearinger in, because I just feel that he brings an element that the Ravens could have used the entire season, even when they were healthy. It's a safe, smart move, and it was the easy move, as he's already been with the Ravens previously. But I don't think that's going to really move the needle a ton.
And the Ravens might not be done with safety. We don't know yet, but right now that's the one move that is being reported. But Spencer, let's get into the defense in terms of the Cincinnati game. Let's talk about the game plan. What did you see out of Don Martindale on Sunday?
I saw a really concise effort to leave the top on, put the top back on. Marlon Humphrey took Tyler Boyd out of the game, which was good to see. The Bengals' game plan was basically throw speed outs at Maurice Kennedy, and Kennedy had 10 tackles, and his hamstring got sore because he was getting so much run. But Kennedy doesn't have the best long speed, as seen on the kickoff, where he was not able to catch up or gain any ground on the kick returner, who did have a step on him, so he's gone anyway. But they were keeping the offense in front of them. They were giving different looks. The Bengals just avoided the middle of the field like the plague. I don't know why the Bengals only ran the ball a few times, as Joe Mixon is probably their greatest asset and weapon, or throwing him screens. They did have one little swing pass to him that got up the sideline, but that was just because Joe Mixon's a special athlete. So I don't think the Bengals really were aggressive enough or were willing to play ball over the middle of the field. But Wink dialed it up really well. A lot of people are criticizing the pass rush for not getting sacks until late in the game and only getting, you know, 5 quarterback hits. But Dalton was getting the ball out. He was getting his first read out. When that happens, when a quarterback takes a 2-step drop and throws a speed out, no one's going to get a sack there. Very few are going to get a quarterback hit there. Maybe Aaron Donald and a couple guys can, but Ravens don't have that. I thought that the pass rush was decent. I thought the game plan was decent. Earl Thomas played really well. I love what I saw from Josh Bynes and LJ Fort, really. And it's crazy to say or to think, but they played so much better than we were seeing Peanut and Kenny Young playing. LJ Fort was diagnosing screens and was, you know, playing under control and was steady, a steady force. He got a good bit of snaps. And then Bynes looks like CJ Mosley never left, with the dreads and the 57, blitzing down the A-gap, stuffing the run, being a really sure tackler and bringing a calming presence football IQ-wise, getting guys lined up and understanding what the offense might want to do. So that veteran experience has been everything for the Ravens over the last 2 weeks and will be moving forward. It's good to see that last-minute additions mid-season have been able to pay off, as we saw Jihad Ward also ended up taking quite a few snaps, over 20. And because of that, because of the moves that Eric DaCosta was able to pull at the last minute, they might be able to kind of, I don't want to say save the season, but save the season, because the way the defense was playing, the way the linebackers were playing, they were not going to be able to compete with some of the teams they have coming up in the Patriots, the Texans, the Seahawks, the 49ers, teams that are running complex offenses. We're going to leave those two linebackers, Peanut and Kenny Young, like chickens with their heads cut off too many times. So I was very thrilled to see that. Marlon Humphrey is truly, truly a top shelf cornerback in the NFL right now. He can cover guys big, small, fast, and tall. And it's been awesome watching him lock down one side of the field. Eventually, Dalton tried to throw a deep ball between him and Deshaun Elliott, and they ended up jarring the ball out loose. Tyler Boyd only had 2 catches for 10 yards, so the only weapon the Bengals had in the passing game was completely eliminated. And it was good to see these past 2 games the defense is able to step up. They now have really strange statistical placement and rankings, as they're the 4th best run defense. They're not doing great in pass defense. They're letting up 23 points a game, but they're really good on 3rd down. They're not getting a ton of pressure, or they're not getting a ton of sacks, but they have a lot of quarterback hits. They've actually have the 6th most interceptions in the league, with 5, I believe, after Marlon Humphrey was able to net that tipped pass that Josh Bynes deflected and luckily found Marlon Humphrey's lap while the Bengals were down in the red zone. So the Ravens defense is definitely trending upward, and that's the way you want to see it after letting up 1,000 yards and 73 points in back-to-back weeks against the Browns and the Chiefs. The only place to go was up, and they've done the right things, made the right moves, held each other accountable, and tried to game plan and figure out what the best methods are to mask their weaknesses and play to their strengths.
And the defense looked amazing. You're completely 100% right, especially after those 2 leads against the Chiefs and the Browns. A lot of the areas on that defense have improved, but one that has kind of been stagnant and hasn't really improved is that pass rush. The Ravens were able to get 2 sacks on Andy Dalton, giving them 11 on the season. But it looked like for the entire game, Andy Dalton had a clean pocket, was able to throw the ball. And when he is throwing 10-yard outs on every single play and Auden Tate is making Randy Moss-like catches, it's hard to get a pass rush when the ball is coming out 1 or 2 seconds after the snap. But the pocket just looked super clean for Dalton. Didn't get a lot of pressure. They weren't forcing him into a lot of throws that he didn't want to make. Are you worried about this Ravens pass rush for the rest of the season?
No, I'm actually not. I like the addition of Jihad Ward, and I think that the issues were somewhat with misusing the personnel that they have. We saw Brandon Williams this past weekend only get 45% of snaps. The Ravens were using more outside linebackers, bringing defensive backs up to blitz, blitzing linebackers. They're getting more speed on the field instead of Michael Pierce and Brandon Williams and Wormley and Ricard and all these heavier, kind of more lethargic guys. They've got some explosiveness, and Pernell McPhee, Judon, and Tyus Bowser all got after it a little bit. Teams like to try to throw the quick stuff against the Ravens because they don't want to throw at Earl Thomas. They don't want Earl Thomas flipping the field, taking the ball away. Marlon Humphrey's been locked down, so teams attack underneath. The quicker quarterbacks get the ball out, the harder it is to get pressure. It's basically just simple math at that point. So if the Ravens force teams to hold the ball with good coverage and can kind of cover underneath a little bit better, I think they'll start getting home more. And as this defense finds its rhythm and works the kinks out personnel-wise, as you were saying earlier, Kevin, you know, you're kind of seeing at this point who's going to be playing when and how much. It's just getting pass rush in obvious passing situations. You know, on second and 10, if they run a play, the other team runs a play action or something, the Ravens are able to get some pressure here and there on that. But in crucial situations, it's felt like even over the last couple of years, if they just rush four or something like that, they don't have guys that are just winning one-on-one, especially inside. And Jahad Ward had 3.5 sacks as an interior defensive lineman last year on the Colts. So I think he's going to end up playing a pretty big role for this team on third down. And I think Chris Wormley has started to kind of get a little fire under his keister and play with a little bit more push and have some more developed pass rushing moves. So look for him to make some contributions as well. And I think that it's a little overblown that the pass rush has not been that effective. They still are getting some quarterback hits. And if you go watch other games, teams aren't getting home as much as you think, as much as the common fan thinks. So I believe in the Ravens pass rush. After the bye, I just love John Harbaugh's ability to take inventory of his roster, of his play calling, of what the coaches are doing, of what the players are doing, and listen what's working, what's not working, and identify it himself. This team always comes out very strong after the bye. So I think this defense in November is going to look a lot different than this defense did in the end of September and the beginning of October. And it's a work in progress. I was a little bit overzealous with my expectations. I thought the defense was going to be a unanimous top 10 unit across the board, but the injury bug has bitten the strength of the unit and the DBs, and then we've seen the Ravens have had to shuffle some things around and find the right guys. So hopefully they're able to do so. They'll be tested. I mean, the litmus test is coming up against the Seahawks and then the Patriots and the Texans. So Ravens haven't really beat any good teams since the start of 2018 that I can recall. The only playoff team that the Ravens have beaten over the last 2 years is the LA Chargers in LA. And that was on top of an excellent defensive performance, a really efficient performance by Lamar Jackson. So with the Bills being a potential playoff contender, the Jets could possibly turn things around with Sam Darnold, the Niners, the Rams, the Seahawks, all these teams. We'll see what the Ravens are really made of right now. And if, you know, they can't win a couple of those games, they don't deserve to be in the playoffs. I don't see the Steelers winning more than 6 or 7 games. So if the Ravens can win 2 or 3 of their, you know, 5, 6, 7 tough games they have remaining, they're going to be in good shape. They get to play the Bengals again, wedged between the Texans and the Patriots, as well as play the Steelers. And in all likelihood, it's going to end up being week 16. You know, the Browns are 7-7 or something of the sort. The Ravens are 8-6 and going to play week 16 in Cleveland and decide the division. So I feel like that's the way this race could end up going, unless, you know, all hell breaks loose in Cleveland as they're 2-5 and tempers start flaring and the rookie head coach can't handle the locker room and all those things. So I'm just happy with where the Ravens are as a Ravens fan myself, knowing that they're 4-2 with a 2-game lead in the division. If you would have told me that was going to happen in August, I'd be ecstatic. You can't ask for much more. The Ravens have won more games than the Dallas Cowboys, the Philadelphia Eagles, quite a bit of other teams as well. But I like what this team has moving forward.
I do as well. And you look at the two blemishes on their record, those two losses. If you told me the Ravens are going to lose to the Chiefs in the preseason, I mean, I would have believed you. The Chiefs are a juggernaut. While they've been slowed down the past 2 weeks, Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes, and with all those losses on defense, I would expect that. The Browns would be a game I wouldn't be expecting as much, but look, you're not going to win all the games. It's going to be a struggle sometimes. You're going to play down to opponents, whatever it may be, and the Browns are talented. So 4-2 so far. The Ravens have to win the games. They're supposed to win, and so far that is what they've done. But Spencer, that's all I have for you today, but quickly I want to get your final score prediction for this Ravens and Seahawks game going to Seattle, that West Coast trip. How do you think this game plays out?
I think this game turns into a shootout of sorts. The Seahawks defense is very overrated, although they have three players that will match up very well against this Ravens offense. So I think Bobby Wagner, Jadeveon Clowney, and the combination of Jaron Reed and Puna Ford could present some problems against the rushing or for the Ravens in the rushing game. But their secondary is dreadful. I wouldn't be shocked to see the Ravens kind of light them up a little bit. And I think this ends up being, you know, something in the high 20s or 30s. Seattle has the home field advantage, and this is a tough game on the schedule. So I see the Seahawks walking out of this one maybe 34 to 30, something of the sort. Lamar Jackson seems to really up his play as a passer when he plays kind of these notable younger quarterbacks. He wants to show that he's got the stuff. So I think that the Ravens play an admirable game but can't quite pull victory away. The Ravens are really good against the run. The Seahawks like to run, and the Seahawks are without their tight end. So I think it'll be closer than some people anticipate. So a lot of people kind of feel like the Seahawks might run away with this one. But I see it being close down to the wire, and I think the Ravens are getting a good grasp for what works and what doesn't and kind of taking this game seriously, knowing they have a bye next week to recover ahead of playing the Patriots. So I think the Ravens fall, but feel good about it after.
I as well think it'll be a Ravens loss, but also close. I think I'm going to go with 28-24 just because of Russell Wilson. He's been playing at an MVP caliber rate this season. Even if the Ravens do get some pass rush this week and get Russell Wilson rattled in the pocket, he really doesn't get rattled in the pocket. He has that escape ability, and his receivers, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, have played very well this season. And so I think that that's going to ultimately be the difference, will be Russell Wilson out-dueling Lamar Jackson in a way, maybe not with his legs, but the way he's been slinging the ball this year, he's extremely hard to stop when he gets rolling. So I'm going to say 28-24.
I like it. I like it a lot. And it's going to be fun. This will be a fun one because Russell Wilson and Lamar Jackson, two mobile quarterbacks, kind of Henry Houdini in the pocket.
Exactly.
These defenses practice against those two guys every day, so it's a little bit of an advantage for the defenses, I feel like, in a weird way that they've been practicing against these, you know, escapable quarterbacks. So this is an interesting matchup. I'm really excited. The Ravens don't get to play Russell Wilson often. I think it'll be a really fun game and exciting to watch as a football fan.
Exactly. And with the uncertainty of Duane Brown, the Seahawks all-pro tackle this week, they might have to start George Fant, who hasn't gotten rave reviews from Seahawks fans, hasn't really shown a lot. So maybe this is the game where the Ravens pass rush happens, but then again, we did say that last week as well. But Spencer, again, that's all I have for you today. I want to thank you again for coming on the show, and hopefully, again, we're talking on another Taco Tuesday with another Ravens win.
Yes, sir. It was a pleasure. Take it easy, everybody.
Yes, and so tomorrow we will be getting into some game previews and predictions with Locked On Seahawks, specifically them asking me questions about the Ravens and me firing them right back to them about the Seahawks. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.